Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello, hello! Welcome to Kitchen Prescription, the podcast you listen to when you don't know what to make for dinner. It feels somewhat surreal to welcome you to the first official episode of this podcast that's been living in my head for far too long. And well, it's just time for it to become a reality, and I'm so excited about it. Now, before we get into the meat of this first episode, I wanted to take just a few minutes to introduce myself and let you know why I consider myself qualified to help you get dinner on the table. Many of you listening know or are familiar with who I am to some extent, but for those of you who don't, here is the, let's call it the bite-sized version of my story. So, I grew up in Utah. A family that loved food, and I had these great food roots. My great-grandparents owned and operated this diner where my great-grandmother made the pies every day, and just more than that, all of my best memories from growing up are attached to food in some way. I had a mom that loved to cook, and cooking dinner wasn't something she really dreaded. It was something that was almost like stress relief to her, and I never really heard her complain about it, and I can't say the same thing for myself, but it really had an impact on me. My mom loved food, and my family loved food, and it made a big difference. I ended up going to college to pursue a degree in broadcast journalism right as the Food Network was gaining massive popularity. And from the time I stepped on campus, I knew that I didn't necessarily want to work in news television, but I really wanted to work in food television. I ended up getting an internship at Martha Stewart Living in New York, working on a show called Everyday Food that aired on PBS, and it was a cooking show. And that experience led to an opportunity to be a production assistant on a Food Network show called Semi-Homemade Cooking with Sandra Lee. Some of you may be familiar with it, but it was amazing. And then I went back 3 summers in a row. I ended up working on Martha Stewart's show she did for NBC, her daytime show, and it just really, I'm so lucky in that what I thought I wanted to do actually ended up being this massive passion for me, and I continued to want to pursue it. So after these internships, I went back to my university, and I pitched this crazy idea of having a college cooking show. And I had one professor in particular who really believed in me and thought, well, you can make it. And if it's not terrible, we'll put it on, you know, the student-run network here. And so I did it. It was terrible, but it was cute and kitschy. And I was able to enlist students who took an elective course to work on the show. And over the course of a couple years, we ended up filming 100 episodes of Kelsey's Kitchen, fast, fun, and affordable meals for college students. And it was just an incredible experience. And if you dig deep on YouTube, I'm sure you can find some pretty funny clips from Kelsey's Kitchen. But I knew that I wanted to be serious about this career, and I knew that after getting my undergraduate degree that I wanted to go to culinary school. I moved to Los Angeles. I did a Cordon Bleu program. While I was doing that, I was working as a private chef for a family and also auditioned for a show called Next Food Network Star, which was a show on Food Network where you competed to win your own cooking show. And I was just young enough and stupid enough to think that I knew what I was doing. I did the show. I did not win, but I did well enough that the network kind of continued working with me. And the most important thing that came from that experience was a relationship with Bobby Flay. So Bobby was a judge on the show. He has a production company, and he really felt that he saw talent in me. And after the show was done, he kind of extended an offer. Hey, like, let's work together. I'm not sure he thought that I would actually email him, but you better believe I did. And it was right when Food Network was launching their sister network, Cooking Channel. We pitched a show called Kelsey's Essentials, which is one of the first pieces of their original programming. It went on for multiple seasons. I got a Daytime Emmy nomination for the show, which was incredible. I didn't even know I was eligible to get that. The reason I tell you that is that I got to go to the Beverly Hilton and sit at a table next to Ina Garten and Jeffrey. Talk about a pinch me moment. I have had dinner with Ina Garten. So that's what you are supposed to take from this. That's the most impressive thing, is that I figured out how to have dinner with Ina. I didn't win the award, but who cares? I was having dinner with Ina. So the show was great. It was successful. I went on to write a cookbook called Kitchen Confidence that's kind of a fresh approach to the basics in the kitchen. And another show called Kelsey's Homemade on Cooking Channel that was more about family life in New York City with me and my young family. From there, I created a line of small kitchen tools and small kitchen appliances with the Home Shopping Network. And then my career took a little bit of a pivot when I hosted a game show called Dinner Takes All. That's something I thought I'd never do, is be a game show host. But hey, I've done it. The show is so much fun. You can still watch it, actually. We'll put a link in the show notes. But yeah, I hosted Dinner Takes All, where two families face off with their best dishes. And that was a blast. And then most recently, I've really wanted to invest in my community directly. So I've created a monthly recipe club, which is 5 new recipes that are voted on by club members and then developed by me to be quick and easy and loved by everyone at the table. And then also a course for revamping your kitchen and kitchen systems called Family Meal Makeover. So that's what I've been up to most recently. But enough about me. Now that I rattled off all of my bullet points of my career, I kind of want to tell you a little bit about my family, because my family is such a big reason for doing what I do. And I will reference them often on this podcast. So I figure I might as well tell you a little bit about them. Under my roof here in this cute little suburb of Pasadena lives my family, my husband, Robbie, who's just an awesome partner in crime. And then I've got three kids, Oliver, who's 9, Nora is 5, and Penelope, who we call Penny, is almost 2. And man, we worked really, really hard to get our family. It's a long story, and I've actually done a handful of podcasts about how we built our family, because it's somewhat unique. I'll also include some of those in the show notes as well. But we had 2 micro preemies. Ollie was born 12 weeks early. I had another beautiful baby boy named Leo that was born at 25 weeks. And we unfortunately lost him and lost the ability to safely have kids the good old-fashioned way. And so we ended up growing our family through gestational surrogacy with our 2 daughters. And that's kind of how we built this family that we dreamed of. So the reason I share that with you is because I kind of want to talk about the why I care so much about food, and specifically its connection to my family. And hang with me here as I take you back to 2015, when we had just gone through this terrible experience of having another micro preemie, a baby who, he was just the teeniest thing you've ever seen. He only weighed 15 ounces, and he lived in the NICU for about a month and then passed away due to complications from his prematurity. That was, no question, the most difficult thing I've ever been through. And I noticed something. I noticed that when I was in this this place of so much grief and a place that I'd never been before mentally and emotionally. We kind of stopped doing some of these family ritualistic things. And for me, I stopped cooking. I didn't feel like it. And I was just so broken in so many ways. And we kind of stopped that ritual of coming to the table together and breaking bread as this family unit. After about 6 months, when I was sick of feeling so awful every day, I thought to myself, you know, I'm just going to start cooking again. I think I've got to find that person who was not as broken as I am now. And cooking was one of the first things I thought, I'm just going to try a little bit. I noticed how even if it was once a week, the ritual of bringing my family to the table, it didn't matter if it was breakfast, lunch, or dinner, but that ritual is really sacred. And I don't use that word lightly, but it really made a huge impact. And what I found is that there's a lot of healing that can happen at a silly family dinner table. And I don't care if that's cold cereal or pizza that you picked up on the way home. It's not about what's being eaten. It's about the act of eating together. And through that really dark and difficult time, I really made a commitment that as a family, I wanted to do our very best to get to the dinner table as often as possible and connect and really make that family ritual a priority in our family. And like I said, chicken nuggets or a made-from-scratch lasagna. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. What's most important is the people sitting at the table and not necessarily the quality of the recipe or the organic ingredients or whatever it may be. And it was just a really pivotal lesson for me. And I think that that's one reason I feel so passionate about this idea of family and food kind of coexisting together. I love food because of its connection to family, and it's just been such a massive part of my life. So I'm guessing that if you're listening to this podcast, you also want to prioritize getting your family to the table. So we're likely all in agreement there. But let's be honest. Let's be honest for a second. Making weeknight dinner happen multiple nights a week is no joke. It's hard. Like, super hard. Now, even for someone who is considered a family food expert, you guys have to know, I struggle just like you do. I'm really close to my sister, and I talk to my sister about this often, and that I really just want to help people solve problems, really genuinely want to help people get to that table more often. And she said something that I was like, you're right. And she said, it's a really hard problem to solve. I agree. It's hard for a reason. But, you know, whether it's a picky eater, you know, my daughter Nora, who's 5, is so adorable and so fun, but so picky right now. Or my almost 2-year-old Penny, that 25% of her meal ends up thrown on the floor. Or my 9-year-old Ollie, who is a budding food critic and's got an opinion about everything. I share that with you because I want you to know that I feel so many of the pain points that you feel. And I certainly don't have everything figured out, but because this is my profession, I have spent the past 15 years really trying to figure out solutions for home cooks. I really feel like I can help you. So let's talk a little bit about the episode structure. So each episode, I'm going to share 3 recipes to help you as you're planning meals for the week. As I have kind of reached out to my audience, whether it's through an Instagram community or my newsletter or my website, the number one complaint I hear is that I just don't know what to make for dinner. I hate deciding what to make for dinner. So in an effort to help you solve that problem, we're going to start at the top of the episode each week with 3 really simple recipe ideas that might spark something for you so that if you are meal planning for the week, this might be a great jumping off point for you. So let's jump into my suggestions for this week. Now, there are recipes that I, in my mind, kind of label as recipe not required, meaning they're so simple that you really don't even need to read a recipe. So I'm going to try and always give you guys one of those. What I want to share with you this week is my Thai crunch salad. So I love this recipe. And if I'm being honest, this recipe was kind of modeled after, oh my gosh, Don't give up on me, guys. A California Pizza Kitchen recipe. And if you've been to CPK, you know what I'm talking about. The salad is on the menu and it's delicious. Essentially what it is I am taking two supermarket shortcut ingredients, a rotisserie chicken and an Asian salad kit. And those are the base of the recipe. So when I'm talking no recipe required, you toss those two things in your, whether it's your online grocery shopping cart or if you're shopping in person, and you can pull this together. So the recipe is really great. The thing that kind of elevates it, and I'm all about kind of jazzing up some of these shortcut ingredients, is I like adding edamame. And edamame has been one of those ingredients for my young kids. They love it. It's this bright, beautiful green color. I usually buy it frozen because if you buy it fresh, it can get kind of slimy quickly, but the frozen's fantastic. I use the edamame in there and then an avocado, which is that great, good fat protein, and then some peanuts chopped, garnish over the top, and then I usually make a peanut sauce, which is all pantry ingredients, some peanut butter, some soy sauce, rice wine vinegar, a little chili garlic or sriracha, water, and a little bit of sugar. Or you can buy a pre-made peanut sauce. But between the Asian salad kit plus the shredded rotisserie chicken, the edamame, the avocado, it just makes a really nice, hearty salad that qualifies as dinner. And I say that because every now and then we have dinner, and it'll be a salad. My husband will be like, wait, this is dinner? I'm like, yes, this is dinner. But when you've got all of that good stuff in there, that doesn't happen too often. It really is nice. It's great lunch as well. And then for my kids, my picky ones at least, they eat it deconstructed. You will never find a bigger fan of deconstructing recipes than me. No, they're not going to eat it all tossed together. Oliver might, but Nora and Penny, you know, there's going to be the shredded chicken, there's going to be the edamame separate, the avocado separate, maybe even some peanuts as well, and maybe I'll do a little bit of the peanut sauce for dipping the chicken in. So you're going to be able to find all of these recipes on my website, kelseynixon.com, but like I said, this one's so simple, there's barely a recipe required. And the thing I love about this next recipe is make it once, get two meals out of it. It's one of those that's awesome for using up the leftovers. So it's my chili lime tacos. Chili lime turkey tacos is what they're called on my website. I use ground turkey for the taco meat. Now you could totally use beef or chicken or whatever, but really what makes it so delicious is I start with sauteing a little onion, I add some garlic, I use a little bit of chili lime seasoning. My chili lime seasoning comes from Trader Joe's, and for any of you Trader Joe's fans out there, you know what I'm talking about. It's a customer favorite, but the tajin, T-A-J-I-N, you've likely seen that at most grocery stores, maybe on an ethnic aisle or something like that, but it's really similar. So if you don't have access to Trader Joe's, I want you to take a look for the tajin seasoning. That's also a really great replacement, and you can use equal parts. If you can't find either, a little chili powder with some lime zest, maybe a little paprika, and some salt will also do the trick. What else is in this taco meat? Some diced green chilies, tomatoes, and cilantro. And it's just the perfect, it's so, so yummy. And my kids, who won't eat a composed taco, they just eat this ground meat up like crazy. They love it. So then it's taco night, right? You've got some thinly sliced cabbage, some avocado, some crumbled cheese. We like cotija, but you could use, I don't care. You do cheese however you want to do it on your tacos, but a little sour cream for garnish, and these are always a hit. And I'm going to try not to exclusively refer to Trader Joe's, but I am telling you that if you are a Trader Joe's shopper, this is one of those recipes where you can pick everything up. You don't have to shop at Trader Joe's to make this recipe, but Trader Joe's makes it really easy. This is one of those recipes where if you put me in a Trader Joe's and you blindfolded me and you said, Kelsey, go get everything to make the chili lime tacos, I could walk through the store and pick everything up. That's how often I make it. And then the leftover recipe, I almost always take this extra taco meat. So sometimes I will double this. So instead of doing 1 pound of ground turkey, I'll do 2 pounds. And the next day I always do kind of like a hearty burrito bowl or taco salad. So the only difference for a burrito bowl is I would add maybe some rice and beans, and then I would add the cooked turkey, ground turkey, taco meat, and then the same toppings, the, you know, avocado and the crumbled cheese and the pickled onions and things like that. But it is so, I almost look forward to the bowl as much as I do the actual tacos. And I don't want you guys to skip this tip either, because the Bolthouse Farms cilantro, I think it's the cilantro lime yogurt dressing, is so delicious, quite clean and healthy. And that's what I serve with it when I turn it into a bowl slash taco salad. And it's so yummy. It's so, so good. And then the last recipe I'm going to recommend for this week is the skillet creamy tomato tortellini with sausage and spinach. And this is one of the recipes in my recipe club for the month of January. And this is such a hit with my family right now. They love it. First of all, I like that you can make the entire thing in one skillet. It uses another favorite pantry staple. I'd probably call it a shortcut. But it's the Rao's marinara sauce. And if you followed me on Instagram in any capacity, you know that I mean, if they had a fan club, I should, you know, I'd run for president. That's how much I love the Rao's sauce. It is so delicious. It's a little more expensive than some of the other jarred marinara sauces you're going to find on the shelves, but it is worth every single penny. So I highly recommend using the Rao's in this recipe. But tortellini is so great because it's a nice, hearty, filled pasta. And while this recipe has both the tortellini and some Italian sausage in it, if you are vegetarian or wanting to cook without meat, you could absolutely leave the sausage out. And this is still hearty enough for a weeknight dinner. The fact that the spinach in there is a great, good-for-you ingredient. It cooks down so much that Ollie, you know, who's getting better, never complains about the spinach being in there. But this is another one of those recipes I can deconstruct for my girls. I pull out the tortellini. I pull out the crumbled sausage. We've got a little parm on top of the tortellini, and they think it's fantastic. So, skillet creamy tomato tortellini. So yummy. I took it to, I took leftovers to a neighbor recently, and she's texted me 3 times raving about it, loving it. So it's a good one. All right, you guys. So there's your 3 simple recipes to kind of kick off some ideas as you meal plan for the upcoming week. And after we tackle that, we're going to get into the kitchen prescription portion of the podcast. Now, this should not be shocking since that's the name of the podcast, but what does it even mean? What does kitchen prescription mean? It comes from this idea, you know, we just kicked off a new year, and I have just started offering customized kitchen consulting for people who struggle to get dinner on the table each night, both virtual and in-home, mostly virtual right now. But essentially what it is clients share their pain points of what isn't working for them in their kitchens, and then I help them develop a plan to get things back on track. So think of it as kind of like a cooking meets organization service where I help you organize, outfit, and then optimize your kitchen to make mealtime feel more manageable. And it's such a great service, and I've had such an amazing time working with the clients that I have. But some people may think, well, is that really necessary? And the reason it's so necessary is we have heard this phrase for years, to the extent that it's overused, but you hear people say that the kitchen is the heart of the home. And it really is, right? When you think about the rooms that you spend the most time in and the rooms that get the most wear and tear, I think you're hard-pressed to find another room in your home that beats out the kitchen. So if there's any space in our homes that we should invest in, it's the kitchens. Right? And when I say invest in, I don't mean new marble countertops, although that would be wonderful. I'm talking about systems, really just giving it the attention it deserves so that it can operate to make your life as easy as possible. Because whether we like it or not, we all gotta eat. We all gotta eat, and chances are you gotta feed more people than just yourself. And so anything we can do to pump food out of those kitchens a little more easily and do it, dare I say, more enjoyably, is worth that investment. If you start thinking about it, no one person or family is the same, right? Every person out there who cooks for themselves or someone they love is doing it under different circumstances. So some of you may be a two-person family unit. Some of you may have four teenage boys. Some of you may be cooking for yourselves. Some of you may be recent empty nesters. Maybe even some of you are trying to figure out how to cook after someone in your family has recently been diagnosed with food allergies, and that's feeling overwhelming. So as a result, recommendations for recipes, kitchen tools, or even systems in your kitchen will likely be a bit different depending on who you are. That's where this idea of kitchen prescription comes in. So my goal is to walk you through kind of a three-step process to nailing down a kitchen prescription that will work for you. So it's the same system I use with my clients, but it can easily be applied to anyone. It's also the same system I walk you through in my Family Meal Makeover course, that everyone should really invest in this idea of organizing, outfitting, and then optimizing their kitchens for easy cooking. All right, so today I'm going to share my current kitchen prescription that's working for me and my family. Now, this will evolve as the needs of my family change, but this is currently what's working. And we're going to go through those three categories. So organize. There's been a lot of buzz about organizing kitchens, and I am here for it. And I love a clear bin with, you know, beautiful handwriting in a white Sharpie pen. Once again, here for it. Those exist in my pantry, but I want you to know that those are only as good as they function. So if a small clear bin with the words granola bars written on it does not solve a problem for you, I don't care how good it looks. Rainbow order? Yes, looks fantastic. Is it practical to maintain? Probably not. So we're going to talk about some really practical organization solutions in kitchens that really help. If you were to only buy one thing to organize your kitchen this month, let it be a Lazy Susan. I love a Lazy Susan, and I'm not talking about the ones that are built into your cabinetry. I'm talking about the ones that are like a turntable, and they have some with tall sides and some that are clear and some that have rubber on the bottom so that if you get spills, you can easily wipe them up. But a Lazy Susan is such a great way to organize, especially if you are working with a small kitchen. And look, I lived in New York City for nearly a decade. I have worked in small kitchens. I have also lived in a, 3,000 square foot home in suburbia where I had a huge kitchen, which was fantastic. I had more space than I knew what to do with. And now I live somewhere in between, but I don't have a ton of kitchen space. So a Lazy Susan is awesome for spices, for condiments, medicine that you keep in the kitchen. It's great for cleaning supplies under the sink. It's just a great way so that stuff doesn't get stuck all the way at the back of those cabinets. And with a quick spin, you can get to what you need. I love them. I have 7 in my kitchen, and that's not an exaggeration. And I'm open to more. I truly am. So think about that if you're looking for a product that is working really well in the small kitchen I'm cooking out of right now. I also want to talk about being a big fan of a well-organized fridge. I bring this up because it's the beginning of the year, and likely all of our refrigerators could benefit from a good old-fashioned clean out. And what that means is you're going to take everything out. You're going to wipe it down, and then you're going to think about a system associated with your refrigerator. Let me give you an example of what that means. So for me, right now, I have a couple of different bins, 2 bins that I love that just really help to kind of manage the chaos behind the doors of my refrigerator are a kids bin and a leftovers bin. The kids bin is all the things I want my kids to eat in the refrigerator. So we've got apples, grapes, strawberries. It's big. It could be a kid's shelf, right? Baby carrots, bell peppers, string cheese. We have these pepperoni sticks that my kids really like. Oftentimes, if my kids want a snack, I want them to go to the fridge before I want them to go to the pantry because there's likely going to be a more nutritious option in the fridge. So if you're able to create a small space in your fridge that is almost like a grab area for your kids to grab a snack. Sometimes I'll say you can have a fridge snack. And I think that that's a great way to get kids eating healthier snacks. The other time we use it is at dinner time. I'm going to come back to that. And then a leftover bin. Because I find that leftovers can get shoved to the back of the fridge so easily, and then you forget about them and you never use them. So if you've got a leftovers bin, it's a really easy way at lunch the next day or when you're trying to pull a meal together to look there first. And that's been a great tool inside my refrigerator. Okay, let's talk about outfitting, meaning the tools I'm loving in my kitchen right now that I feel contribute to my kitchen being more efficient and easier to work in. I love a big cutting board. I think most people are using a cutting board that is too small. And as a result, you find using a knife to be more difficult and it's more frustrating to cook in general. If you have a small cutting board, or if you have a flimsy cutting board, nothing is worse than those IKEA plastic, they're not even cutting boards. If you have those, throw them out. My favorite cutting board is a brand called Epicurean. It's a composite board. It's thin, so it's not too heavy, but I really like how it feels under my knife, and they come with these little rubberized bottoms so that they don't slip slide around. Love them. But I don't care. You want to use a gel board or like a plastic board or something, fine. Just make sure it's big and make sure it's not sliding around. Also, love a sharp knife. If you've got a knife that you invested in that's a decent brand, but it's still, honestly, a sharp knife is better than a, quote, good knife that's completely dull. The most important thing about your knife is that it's sharp. A sharp knife is a safer knife, I promise you. And if you've ever cut yourself with a dull knife, you know what I'm talking about. So the best thing to do if you feel like your knives are dull, and I say knives hesitantly because really you only need three knives. You need a chef's knife or basically like an all-purpose knife. You need a serrated knife to cut bread and maybe a paring knife. But really just get a good all-purpose knife. And I hesitate to give too many specifications because the most important thing is that it feels good in your hand. So for me, I have really small hands, and so I like a 5-inch blade, which is really short, but I love my knife. I use a Wusthof, it's 5 inches. It's a Santoku knife, so it's kind of got these divots so that vegetables tend to fall off it easier. Just make sure it's sharp. If you need to sharpen knives, you can take them to Sur La Table, Williams-Sonoma, likely your local hardware store, and typically it's a really affordable service, so that's something I recommend. I'm obsessed with my Breville toaster oven and air fryer combo. I told you guys I live in a house with a pretty small kitchen right now, and I have this great range. It's awesome. But when I turn that thing on, the entire house goes up 17 degrees. It gets so hot in there. So I love this toaster oven because it's so efficient. I love the fact that it's got the air fryer function, where it can make things extra crispy, and it's just been awesome. And I've got lots of friends who've invested in it, and if you're looking for a toaster oven or if you're looking for something that's going to heat up really quickly, reheat leftover beets are really well. If you're looking for something that's going to be great for those chicken nuggets you're heating up for your kids, no hate, no shade. Trust me, my kids eat chicken nuggets just like anybody's kids. That's a great option for that. And then the last one is one I haven't talked about much, which is, this is something my mom gave me a couple of months ago, and I could not be more obsessed with it. It is a Staub multi-use braiser. So what is that, Kelsey? So essentially what it is it's a big skillet, 12 inches. It's cast iron, but enamel cast iron. So it's enamel on the bottom, but cast iron, so it's going to conduct heat really well. It's got two handles. It's got a glass lid, which I'm obsessed with, and it's deep. It's about 3.5 quarts, so it can fit nearly any recipe I make in it, but it's a little bit deep, so the sides come up a bit. I love it. I love it so much. It's so, so great. I guess the only drawback maybe is that it's pretty heavy, but because it's heavy, it conducts heat really well and cooks things beautifully. So I just can't get enough of it. I think it's so awesome. If you are looking for a new, I don't even want to call it a skillet because it's not technically a skillet. It's deeper than a skillet. It doesn't have the one handle, but man, I can cook anything in that. And I just really, really love it. It's one of those things that stays on top of my range all the time. And it's just great. Love the glass lid. And then I've got one more thing here, and I should mention them. I kind of feel like a broken record because I talk about these all the time, but nonstick sheet pans, couldn't love them anymore. And what's great about a nonstick sheet pan is that the cleanup is just easy breezy. It's amazing. Nordicware is my favorite brand, but I also have some OXO ones, and they're fine. I do prefer the Nordicware ones. And if you are a Costco shopper, oftentimes, within the, you know, past 18 months probably, they tend to be selling a set there of the Nordicware nonstick sheet trays. They're kind of this gold color, but I'm telling you, like, they clean up so beautifully. So, if you're a sheet pan recipe lover, invest in some sheet pans. You'll be glad you did. And then last but not least, this idea of optimizing for easy cooking. And what that means is the systems that are working to make cooking easier in my household. And this is what I got. Breakfast for dinner in my back pocket. Right now, when I don't know what to make for dinner, it's breakfast for dinner. I've always got it. I've always got the stuff on hand. Everybody always likes it. And if I'm being honest, I'm doing it about once a week right now. And it's working out great. Other systems that are working well, online grocery ordering. And I know that there are some people who just don't like to do it. But I'm here to tell you that if you tried ordering your groceries online, maybe at the beginning of the pandemic or something, and you were so frustrated because you asked for 6 bananas and they only gave you 1, they have gotten better at it, or at least that has been my experience, is that if you use the notes function, so that if it's important for you to have ripe avocados, or important for you to have green bananas, or important for you to have meat that doesn't expire soon, as long as you include those notes, I have found that the shoppers at the grocery stores have been doing a much better job. I could not be more pleased with online grocery ordering. And I'm convinced that I have gained back days of my life each year by not having to go to the grocery store and walk the aisles. So I'm into it. It's a system that is so great for my busy young family right now. If you're about to make a meal plan, before you do it, open up your fridge, open up your pantry, see what you have on hand. Let that be your guide. Treat your kitchen or your pantry and your cupboards, your refrigerator, your freezer, like a grocery store. What do you already have on hand that can help you determine what to make? It's such a good skill to develop in the kitchen. And then lastly, I referenced this a little earlier, but I mentioned the kids' bin in the refrigerator. Let me tell you another reason this is really important. I've shared with you guys I have a picky eater, and some of you may have picky eaters. At the dinner table, we've got one policy, and it's the no thank you bite. So even if my daughter Nora, who's picky, says, "I don't like that. I don't like that. She's got to take one bite. And if she doesn't like it, she says no thank you. And if she's not going to eat anymore, then she's welcome to get something from the kid bin. And that's the apples, the grapes, the string cheese, the pepperoni sticks. That is working really well for us. So the no thank you bite is another system that's really working well. So that's just a summary of the kitchen prescription that tends to be working for my family right now with these young kids who have got all sorts of opinions, but it's working well. It's working well. Many episodes will feature a guest who kind of walks us through their own kitchen prescription, but I want you to know that I also would love to hear from you, the listeners, who are in need of this idea of a kitchen prescription. So I've got a Google form that you can fill out, or you can submit a voice memo or call in and share kind of some of your specific pain points and ask questions about the things that are making dinner feel so difficult. And then I'll address a few of those on the podcast. So it'll be fun to feature some of you and really get into tackling some of those questions that you may have. I'm genuinely excited to help you solve the roadblocks and really get dinner on the table a bit easier for you. All right, you guys, that's it for our first episode. We did it. Moving forward, episodes will be a bit tighter and shorter in length, but we had some extra housekeeping today, so thanks for your patience there. New episodes are going to drop every Thursday, and in the meantime, you can follow me on Instagram, or you can join my monthly recipe club, or you can sign up for my family meal makeover course, which is kind of a step-by-step guide to getting your kitchen in tip-top shape. It would mean the world to me if you took a few minutes to rate and review the podcast so that others who are stuck trying to decide what to make for dinner can find it. And subscribe if you liked it. I'd love to have you here every week. Thank you so much for joining me today on Kitchen Prescription. I look forward to next week. Talk soon, everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro, the first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.